Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another episode of Source Material. This evening, Ronnie Adams and Mark Radulich join me to discuss The Incredible Hulk, Future Imperfect. We have a lot of fun. I'm not going to bore you with a whole bunch of plugs here at the beginning of the show. Just remember, you can always find us on iTunes. Just search Radulich, R-A-D-U-L-I-C-H. You can give the Radulich and Broadcasting Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. Let's get on with this show.
All right, well, you know, what I brought you boys here, we got Ronnie, we've got Mark. This is Mark's baby. I knew there was something I had to cover, and Mark, Future Imperfect was the first thing I thought of when I wanted to bring you on the show. Do me a favor and explain why you enjoy Future Imperfect, the story itself. What is it that drew you to it first?
If you know anything about the, sort of the Hulk timeline, this is when he was the professor character. They had just gone through this entire story arc where his different personalities were in conflict. So you had the Savage Hulk, you had Banner, and then you had the Gray Hulk. I think around the same time, they were all fighting, you know, this other version of the Hulk that was like his dad, and it was hateful and all this other stuff. But basically, what came out of it was that the very first version of the Intelligent Hulk. Years later, we would get Doc Green. But this was the first time you ever see the Hulk as an intelligent being. And it's the Professor. And this would go on to the where he was the leader of the Pantheon. And there was a whole series of stories there. Future Imperfect is sort of the natural conclusion of all of that. Because right after Future Imperfect, we get a new creative team in the Hulk, and that's where the whole Planet Hulk and World War Hulk bit start. And the Planet Hulk was like a year-long story. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Hulk movies and what do you do with the Hulk and all this other stuff. You know, if you listen to, like, the Scream Junkies movie fights and all of that, a lot of what comes up is get Hulk off the goddamn planet. You know, when you have this god creature, after a while, I'm having him fight bank robbers isn't really going to work. And there's only how many times can I have him fight the leader? So, or the organization, or the Wendigo. You know, after a while, having him fight, you know, various versions of himself gets boring. So you got to do something with this character. And Planet Hulk and Future Imperfect are two versions of what you can do with the Hulk when you get him off-world. What I liked about the Future Imperfect storyline, all two issues of it, was this idea that what happens when the Hulk outlives everybody? You know, what does he become? As the story goes, for various reasons, he becomes, you know, a tyrannical maniac. And I like that idea. I like the idea that when you read the issue and you hear what the Maestro, who is the Hulk in the future, his rationale for things, it actually makes a lot of sense. You know, he says things like, you have the Professor saying things like, you know, I don't want to betray my friends. He's like, well, why? Your friends will all betray you. You know, things like that. You know, this idea of you'll never be treated as an equal, so stop trying. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of why I also like the Injustice storyline with Superman. It's what happens when you have this person who can't be stopped by anybody, and he starts just living by his own impulses, and what that looks like. You know, when he starts letting his emotions rule him and make his decisions for him, what does that look like? So that's one of the things I really liked about the Future Imperfect story.
Written by Peter David, who I remember as one of the great writers of The Incredible Hulk back when I was just started getting back into actually collecting comics. This came out in 1992. Many listeners that have heard me in the past talk about being a child of the 90s, this is about the time where I started to kind of get back into it. Now, this particular story I had heard about, but I never read. I think up until probably within the last 10 years, I was able to get my hands on a copy of it from the local library. We're not on Blog Talk recording right now, so I can say that. It won't cut me off. But yeah, I got a copy of it, I think, from the local library, sat down and read it. Peter David, great, great writer. The art, okay, now you're going to recognize this name, Ronnie, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
The art is done by a guy by the name of George Perez. Very iconic, I guess is probably the best word to use, artist from the 80s and 90s. Crisis on Infinite Earths. He was drawing that just beautiful art. And you can see, while my personal opinion, I don't think this is George's best work, but there are still some great layouts in here that George, Mr. Perez, did an awesome job with. Specifically, I think, in the beginning when we're introduced to the setting. So there's a few things here. Now, Ronnie, I you know, I'm kind of glazing it over with you. When was the first time you read this book? Was it just now, or was it before this?
It's been before. It was a long time ago that I read it, which is why I made a few mistakes the last time we talked about it. I've read it before, and I loved it, so that's why I wanted to read it again. But just the whole concept of it was to me, was really cool.
Mark, you mentioned the professor, and is this Banner's brain in the Hulk's body? Or is this something totally different? Is that
not really? It's still a personality. The best way to say it is let's take the Hulk, but then now let's give him Banner's genius.
Okay,
sir.
Gotcha. So it's not Banner controlling the Hulk. This is the Hulk with his own personality,
right?
As an intelligent being. So when we get into this, folks, understand that this is not your rampaging Savage Hulk. That's Hulk Smash. So that's our description of the Hulk. We're going to cover a few characters here. There's only really four important characters, in my opinion. But before we get into that, the next three characters, I want to talk about the setting that we're in here. Now, we're 90 years in the future, and it's in a place called Dystopia. Now, I don't know if you can get much more...
Dum, dum, dum.
If you can get much more cliche than that, we're going to shove you into a dystopian future. Mark, did you want to do your best to kind of describe what dystopia is like? It's got to be a nice, bright, cheery place, right?
Well, it's the aftermath of a nuclear war. That's what we're living in. So the soil is destroyed, and you know, people are sort of mutated. They're poor. Yeah, it's essentially, think the Terminator world after Judgment Day. Without the robots.
Mm-hmm.
That's the setting. And in this world, the Hulk, who is the maestro, is the dictator and king.
Yeah, the maestro. You touched a little bit about his motivations. This is the future version, 90 years into the future, the future version of the Hulk. A bearded, grizzly-looking, big-browed, green Goliath. Again, this is not our rampaging Hulk that we're used to. This is another... The Maestro is an intelligent, smart Hulk. So I guess it would be reasonable to assume that it's the Professor 90 years into the future. However, Mark alluded to this earlier, how he has no regard for really the rest of the, you know, of the world that's left. This word was used to describe him in what I read and what I saw. He was a despot, a absolute ruler of Dystopia. Now, Dystopia is the only, like, thriving city among this crazy wasteland of a world out there. Now, it makes sense that he is the ruler because, well, Hulk's the strongest that there is. Another character here that shows up is a lady by the name of Janice. Mark, do you want to let us in on who Janice is?
I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Rick Jones's granddaughter.
Great granddaughter.
Great granddaughter, right.
Yep. And she is the leader of these rebels. One of the things that, you know, they're tasked with is going back in time and grabbing the Hulk and bringing him into the future. Because their sole purpose is to unseat the maestro from his throne. Nobody likes, they live under this world, but nobody likes the maestro. I mean, I don't, there's kind of a little bit of a conflict there for me, because really this is the nicest place there is in Dystopia on the earth. I mean,
here's the thing. The maestro rules with an iron fist. There's no freedom. And the world is subjected to whatever pleasures he has in mind. So, you know, he likes the Goyles.
He does like the Goyles.
You know, and he roams the villages, and he takes the pretty ones. You know, and the people don't want to live that way. One of the things that comes out in Marvel Comics all the time is, I mean, I didn't finish reading Secret Wars, but I read a couple of online summaries.
Mm-hmm.
And that and they talked about how, you know, Dr. Doom saved the universe from oblivion, but he made himself a god king, and that was enough to rile up people's nipples and say, no, we're not going to live this way. You don't get to be god.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here. It's you know, people don't want to be slaves. There's a natural inclination to seek out freedom. And that comes out in various versions of different Marvel comics, and it's the guiding principle here. He is an evil despot, and people don't want to live under him.
Mm-hmm. Just real quick, in regards to the art, you know, the first there's a 2-page splash right at the beginning by George Perez. And I know if anybody out there is thinking, man, you're saying that weird. I've heard that pronounced that way on many other podcasts, and apparently he does not like being called George Perez, which is the first thing I would have called him to his face if I wouldn't have known any different. So apparently his last name, I don't know if it's because of the little thing up at the top above his E or wherever it's at, but it's Perez. Anyway, the guy does a tremendous job on this 2-page splash. I mean, there has to be at least 100 people penciled in there.
Yeah.
It's showing this great marketplace in dystopia, and it's amazing to me. Also, there are some naked chicks. So this is something that in my, you know, back in my youth in 1992, if I would have had my hands on this comic, I would not have been expecting this from Marvel. So it's
and it would have been sticky.
No.
There, but again, this is something that it's.
No.
It's nice to see.
And we've lost Ronnie.
Ronnie's in fetal position. No. But it's right there, right off the bat. I think it's their kind of way of saying. Now I'm not saying there's full frontal nudity here, folks. It's just a couple bare backs, and you can tell that the women are nude.
Hardcore nudity.
That is not the case. There are a couple spots in this book where it doesn't ring like a Marvel comic in the 90s to me. Where
not at all.
It's going towards that little bit of extreme edge of things, pushing the envelope. We'll put it. That's probably the best way to put it. A lot of references to. I think there's a lot of references to sex. I mean, obviously, we got the maestro. He's got his concubines. There's a point in this book where he specifically has a lady that looks just like Betty as one of his women servants.
That's the best part of the story.
True.
If that's what you want to call me. No, what's your name? Betty? No, it isn't. It is now.
So anyway, pushing the envelope. So let's get back to the plot here a little bit. We mentioned Rick Jones. Rick Jones, by the way, is alive. He tasked his granddaughter to go get the Hulk, bring him into the future in order, like I said, to face and maybe dethrone the Maestro. I mean, if you got the Hulk, who better than to take down the Hulk than the Hulk? Hulk is in this future. He's trying to figure out what's going on. He gets to meet his friend, you know, his good friend, his old and decrepit friend, Rick Jones. And this first issue is not really anything astounding to me. I mean, it's pretty much just lays out the plot of them coming to get the Hulk, you know, and he's dealing with the fact that he's in the future. They kind of lay out a good bit of the rebels' plans and who these rebels are. The most interesting part in this first book really is, you know, the introduction of the Maestro and who he is. The other part is the Relic Room. When the Hulk meets Rick Jones and in this secret installation down underneath the Earth, they go into this Relic Room. And now, Ronnie, do you have the comic in front of you right now?
I do.
Do you have that Relic Room I'm talking about in front of you?
I'm getting there.
Go ahead and turn your page to page 45. No, I don't know what page it is. But it's near the end, I think.
Yeah, right here.
Okay. There's another great 2-page spread, and there's an explanation that we're given by Rick Jones about this nuclear war. It apparently killed off all the heroes. And when Hulk walks into this Relic Room, do you want to do your best to kind of describe some of the stuff that's in there?
I see Spider-Man's mask. I see Doctor Strange's cape and amulet. I see multiple Iron Man helmets and two different sets of chest plates on his armor. Captain America's shield, U.S. agent's broken shield, because he was a bad carbon copy of Captain America.
Captain America.
I see a bunch of helmets hanging, like Crimson Dynamo, Black Knight, Yellow Jacket, Thor, Magneto, looks like Kang, maybe? Yeah, Kang, Ant-Man, Nova, I don't know what the purple one is, but I see Quasar's cape, the Black Spider-Man costume, a Sentinel. In the background, I see a broken Black Knight sword, what seems to be Vision's head. And right off to the side of that, you see Beast's skin.
That's messed up.
Yeah, they skinned the Beast. And do what?
Everyone needs a carpet.
It's true. It's true.
I'm a basking rug.
Dr. Octopus's arms, a couple of Professor X's wheelchairs, the Red Skull's skull.
And Rick Jones is actually sitting in.
Yeah, one of the wheelchairs.
Yeah, this is the first time that the Hulk meets Rick Jones in the future here. Mark, now there's a couple that Ronnie haven't said that are the big ones in my opinion. Can you pick those two out? Do you have any idea what those two relics are?
Did he say the Silver Surfer? Surfboard?
I did not. I was saving that one.
There was the surfboard with the bike taken out of it. I'm guessing there's Wolverine's...
Yes.
Wolverine's skeleton with the claws.
It looks like a picture there, Ronnie, but it's freaking... It's
Phoenix is dead again.
Phoenix is... yeah. Dead again. That does say dead again right there. Unbelievable.
But Cyclops' visor.
I think Wolverine and Silver Surfer are two of the big...
Yeah.
Now, how a nuclear war could potentially do this to all our heroes...
I didn't get the sense, though, that it was the nuclear war. It was
the Maestro.
I was under the impression that, you know, the nuclear war took out humanity, but a lot of the heroes were taken out by the Maestro.
Okay. And that would make sense. That would make him all the more of a formidable foe and the last one there is.
I really like when, we don't know it's Rick yet, but the Hulk says this room is completely filled with, and you see Rick come into view and says, relics like me, needs a giant penny. Pretty complete otherwise.
I remember reading that going, whoa, wait a second.
Yep.
That's straight up Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good stuff. So Rick Jones lays out to the Hulk and explains what exactly is going on. There is... Obviously, the Maestro's in control. Maestro finds out about the Rebels' plan because he got a hold of one of the Rebels and did a mind scan or whatever they call it, because there are all sorts of futuristic terms that are used in this particular book.
Okay. Can I stop you right there?
You can.
Okay, so I would say from like a cinematic point of view, I think Future Imperfect, if they, you know, depending on what they're doing with the Hulk, with the Thor movie and everything, if Universal ever sold Marvel back the rights to the Hulk and they wanted to do a movie that was safe in terms of continuity, Future Imperfect is the movie to make, not Planet.
Oh, heck yeah.
I think Future Imperfect would be a perfect way to do a solo Hulk movie that doesn't mess up the further ongoing continuity of the other movies, and you know, and gives us gives people the kind of a Hulk movie that we've been wanting. So the look of the comic is really good. The plot of the comic is really good. A lot of the dialogue is good. However, the one thing that drove me nuts about this is why I stopped you. I really hated the use of slang.
Slang. Flark you.
Flark you, the Studley, though now that's what I'm referring to people as. you know, just it got on my nerves after a while. Like, it felt forced to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it came across that way to you guys, but after a while...
A little bit, yeah.
You know, I was interested in the story. I was not interested in a whole lot any of these characters had to say.
Yeah, I get it. We're in the future, okay? That's probably about... You know, we could have done like maybe three or four different uses of some type of slang, but they stuck to it. They wanted to make sure that you understood that they spoke a different dialect 90 years into the future. Yeah, I agree. I'm right there with you. It's not like it took me out, but it was like you scan.
It's hard to read. You know, I can understand in context what they were saying, but I would find myself being. Or I'd find myself not reading closely any of the dialogue where there was heavy uses of slang because it would just hurt. It would hurt my eyes to read it. You know what I mean? You know, I would kind of skip to the pages where the Hulk was talking to the Maestro, which didn't use any slang, and it made perfect sense, and I really enjoyed those parts.
Yeah, and I didn't want to sit there and have to go. I think it was like the second time they used the word scan.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, okay, what exactly does that mean? I don't want to have to try and interpret that. Whatever, Peter David. This is 1992. I'm going to let you slide.
It put me in mind of the cable comics and how forced the...
the Ascanny-son.
Yeah, how forced the dialogue in it was.
Yeah. I don't have much of an excuse for it, or at least an answer for it. I'm sure that, you know, it was just a matter of trying to...
If I'm shooting a movie, I watched Agent Carter, the two-hour season premiere, season two.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that today. And obviously there's a use of language that tells you, hey, you're in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, but it works better cinematically, I think, than it does in the printed word. Mm-hmm. In the printed word, I feel like... I don't think it's as strong, but I know what the purpose of it is. The purpose of it is to tell you, hey, you're in a different place in a different time. It starts to sound like almost a foreign language, like you're reading a foreign language than not. And while on the one hand, yes, you understand you're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy. On the other hand, I feel like it's taking away from the overall story. You know, which again, why I say like the best parts are the parts where the maestro is trying to convince Banner that he should join his side. That there's no reason to save humanity. Humanity isn't worth saving. They're worth using up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rick explains to him what's going on and who the maestro is. The maestro, like I said, had figured out from one of the rebels what exactly the plan was. Proceeds to try to invade the place. He sends his soldiers down there. They run into some bad, some bad acid and get their skin melted off. The maestro says, screw this, I'll just dig my way down. Digs his way down into the rebels' place, proceeds to invade it, and at the end of issue one, pretty much we have the Hulk and the maestro facing off each it's face-to-face. Both of them saying Dr. Banner, I presume, and that's the end of issue one. So we're going to get...
That's a great panel.
Oh, it is, dude.
Yeah.
Them both looking at each other. It's about to be on. This is a cliffhanger that's going to make me buy issue two, no matter what.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, the Maestro is a lot stronger than the Hulk currently, isn't he?
Yeah. As from what I understand, he... And Mark, you're the Hulk expert here. From what of the three of us, I'm fairly certain. The more radiation that's out there that he absorbs, the stronger he gets. Is that right?
Yes. He is somewhat stronger than the Professor, but he's able to beat him in the fight because he's able to anticipate all of his moves. So he's a better fighter, and he's stronger and strong enough where he can do and does do significant damage.
You say significant damage. We're just going to cut to that right now. He breaks the Hulk's freaking neck.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes it be like that.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. He doesn't kill the Hulk, but he pretty much paralyzes him. Now, you guys all know I'm a fan of time travel. That plot device is one of my favorites, and I will give any movie, any book a shot if it's got that in it, just to see how it's used. I think that's my weakness, to be honest. Ronnie, you can't turn a movie off. I can't stop from trying to ingest time travel plots. One of the things I want to make sure that people understand is the fact that there's a great explanation as to how the time stream or whatever is handled here.
Oh, that gave me a headache.
Well, pretty much what they said was that it is split. So what the Hulk is doing now in the future, the fact that whatever he is doing and the fact that he got his neck broke isn't affecting the Maestro. So the Maestro, you know, he isn't too concerned about, he could kill the Hulk if he wanted. The fact that the Maestro is still living, he uses that as an excuse to make the Hulk realize, hey, you're in my world now. I will take you out if I want to, and nothing's going to happen to me because clearly I'm here right now, and I don't recall getting my neck broke. It's just a way of saying, pretty much eliminating the fact that there could potentially be a paradox, I think is the best way to explain it. There's no, there's no consequences there. There's not going to be any...
It makes sense. Think of it this way. There's a timeline where the Hulk survives a nuclear war, kills all of his friends, and becomes the Maestro. Then there's a timeline where the Hulk is taken from a certain place in the present and brought forward. What we're talking about is two characters who are now existing on two different timelines that are currently intersecting.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you have two different versions of the Hulk. The Hulk that lived to be the Maestro, and the Hulk that went forward in time. And what the Hulk is banking on is that if he kills himself, the Maestro will cease to be. But what the Maestro tells him is, no. You're killing your version of the Hulk. And good luck with that. You have fun, Debicki, because I will continue to be. Because I exist on this other timeline. And the only reason why we're able to, and we are currently connected, but think of it in terms of like the Jesus fish. You've got one line kind of curving this way and another one curving this way, and they are currently intersecting. You know what I mean? You
guys I know what you're drawing there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now they're on the same path, but if one of them ceases to be, then, it's not going to affect the other one because they don't exist on the same, they are not the same people on the same timeline.
Why do you think the Maestro keeps the Hulk around?
Company. We are social beings, and I think at the end of the day, Alexander the Great leaned against the rock and leaned against the boulder and wept. There was no more world left to conquer. At the end of Conan the Destroyer, he's just sort of slumped there on the throne. Mm. There comes a point where, you've conquered everything. And I mean, look at some of the overpowered bad guys in the Marvel Universe. They're always looking for some sort of challenge. They're bored.
Mm-hmm.
Ming the Merciless, the opening line of Flash Gordon is Titus, I'm bored. And Clytus, or whatever his name was. Bob, mm-hmm. I'm bored. And he starts screwing with the weather on Earth. Why keep the Hulk around? Because after so many years of being an unchallenged despot king, you need somebody around to, not be alone.
Mm-hmm.
The slave girls is one thing, but they're not exactly challenging him.
He put the two most powerful beings on the Earth now, or ever, to be honest with you, the two strongest people on the Earth. And imagine what they can do, what kind of havoc they can wreak together, too. They're pretty much, the Maestro is, he controls everything now, but what could they, what could they do together, too? I think it's kind of a thing, too. He has somebody that is his equal, and he's sitting there and, not equal in power or whatever, but the only person that could possibly take him down ever. So that makes him even more powerful.
Plus, think about the Hulk. The Hulk is always, wins through brute strength. But what if he could win another way? What if he could bring someone to his side by the logic of his argument? That's something the Hulk doesn't normally get to do. The Hulk is not known for his lawyering skills.
Right. It's true.
So
that's the She-Hulk.
And Howard the Duck. So there's my source material, Howard the Duck mentioned. So it's an opportunity for him to try to win on a different battlefield using a different method.
Okay. One of the probably the most disturbing images of this book for me was the outside of Maestro's castle. Now, I don't know if you guys remember this in the book, but there's a point where Janus is trying, I think, to find, was it Piz-Fizz? That was the guy that they caught and tortured and figured out what the plan was, and they were looking for Piz-Fizz's body. Amongst a pile, I don't know if there's another word to use other than pile, of bodies that are just thrown outside of the Maestro's castle. That was probably one of the defining points of this book, just to show you the kind of world that dystopia and the people in dystopia have to fear. Is the Maestro going to come down and get me today? Am I going to end up in that pile outside of the castle?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just disturbing. And that really kind of struck it home for me about, how evil and how just a bad character that this Maestro is.
There's no regard for human life. That's what he's all about.
Oh, no.
With the Maestro, his whole philosophy has basically been, humanity was reckless, destroyed the world, so why should I value human life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that then goes to, I'm just going to, fuck bitches and get money. Except the Maestro was
That's him.
Well.
Because the Maestro ain't nothing to fuck with. But that's what it comes down to, is his whole philosophy is, you people have demonstrated a reckless disregard for human life, so why should I take you seriously?
Mm-hmm. Now, the Hulk's healing, okay? He got his neck broke. He's hanging back for a little while, and he's being treated as a guest in the Maestro's castle. He's healing up, you know, and we get the conversations between the Hulk and the Maestro. The Hulk is... he's able to heal enough to where he's able to walk. And he's actually given it some thought to actually maybe sticking around, or at least it seems like it. The Maestro says, hey, just stick around here. Things aren't going to be any different than when you get back home. So he's like, okay, well, I'll think about it. There's a bit of a plot to kill by the Vizier to try and kill the Hulk, which, you know, that must be some crazy weaponry if he's actually going to shoot the Hulk and kill him. However, we find out that the Rebels and the Hulk have been planning this for quite a while. They are going to, they're able to get up, walk around, the Hulk's able to get up and walk around, and the Rebels show up, and take a shot at the Maestro and take him out. So we get another big battle. There's a scene where, again, showing Maestro's disregard of human life, where he grabs one of the, I think it's the lady that's was Betty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some red-haired girl, and I'm looking for the panel here, I can't remember. But anyway, he grabs this girl, and right there in front of Maestro's got her, like, one arm in one hand, one leg in the other, and he's threatening to rip her in half if the Hulk doesn't stop. The Hulk, it kind of tries to call his bluff, and the Maestro just takes this girl, and the way it's drawn is just crazy, because she's just a blur, and he's actually going to swing this human body and hit the Hulk with her. It's just insane.
Nothing like using a whore as a battering.
That's the way it is.
Back the Hulk upside the head with the same bitch.
Wham! The battle continues. They end up in Rick Jones' relic room at one point, and Rick Jones is there, and there's going to be a battle. I think he's about to kill Rick Jones, the elderly Rick Jones. The Maestro has his fist drawn back, and he's about to smash his face in when the Captain America's shield comes through and blocks the Maestro from essentially almost killing Rick Jones immediately. I'd just say that it unfortunately only saved him for probably about another 5 minutes, because the impact... the shield saved him from the complete brunt force of Maestro's fist, but sent him back flying about another 30 or so yards onto none other than Wolverine's adamantium skeleton. And just his luck, he happens to fall on the damn claws, and they come up right through his back, through his chest. And Rick Jones proceeds to, he looks dead. And we get ourselves the battle between the Hulk and the Maestro. It's on. You got any favorite parts about this battle, Mark? Anything you want to say about it?
You know, I mean, it's fine. After a while, I like I said before, watching the Hulk punch stuff isn't very interesting. I find the stuff that was the most interesting to me was the Maestro trying to convince him to join his side. When they were just fighting, I was like, all right, let's get to the end of this already.
Yeah, the Maestro, he definitely tries, he has that psychological manipulative side. And it's hard to think. I honestly am, I'm puzzled to sit there and think that the Hulk would turn into this person. It just seemed, especially back then, I'm sure it just seemed so out of sorts. I mean, what we're usually used to in the 90s was the crazy Hulk smash Hulk, or you got, as things evolved, you got the Professor Hulk here that we have. But you didn't see him becoming a tyrant. That was something that never even crossed my mind when the introduction of the Maestro showed up. And I think that's what makes the Maestro such an interesting character. The fact that he was somebody completely out of the blue and such a vast change from what we were used to and what we would expect from the Hulk. Now, throughout this battle, the Hulk is actually using Captain America's shield as a weapon. He's able to sort of get the better of Maestro, at least at first, and then the Maestro starts taking over. Just like Mark had said earlier, he's got 90 years on the Hulk. 90 years of potential gaining strength a little bit. He just broke the freaking Hulk's neck. Never have I seen the Hulk get his neck broke. It has to take a completely insane, strong, super-powered being in order to do that. As the Maestro's closing in, as the Hulk is crawling away, you're looking at an incredible Hulk that has been beaten to where he's actually had to, he has to crawl away. But what we find out is he's crawling to none other than the one machine that brought him there, and that's Dr. Doom's time machine. And this is such a fitting end. Mark, this is your book, so if you want to describe what happens here, he sends Maestro through the time machine.
It's very poetic, actually. He starts Dr. Doom's time machine and sends the Maestro back to Ground Zero when the Gamma Bomb went. And, you know, he actually alludes to this earlier in the book. He's like, look, there's not much that can kill me, but standing on top of a Gamma Bomb as it goes off would probably do it. And that's exactly what happens to him. And it's sort of the perfect end of that character. I actually like the fact that that's how they got rid of him, instead of, you know, him being beaten or whatever, because they've already said he's overpowered and everything else like that. So I like the idea they had to come up with a different way of doing away with this character.
Mm-hmm.
And that made the most sense.
The fact that he was brought in specifically, he was created for this, 2-issue arc, brought in issue 1, killed issue 2. That's pretty poignant, I think. Obviously,
the Maestro will show up in
exactly. The Maestro will be back. Will return in 2015. Ronnie, what do you think of the end of this this particular? What do you think of the end of the Maestro here?
Just like Mark says, poetic. It comes full circle. The thing that created him destroys him.
That is absolutely right. The start of the Hulk and the end of the Hulk happen all at once, which is just
Just
a great way, to write an ending here.
And also, you get the one guy in the glasses that has a shirt on that says, "My cousin stormed the Maestro's fortress, and all I got was this Flarkin T-shirt."
Yeah, as they're doing cleanup after the Maestro's gone.
Yeah.
Another thing that kind of spoke to me was the fact that the one guy that convinced the Hulk to go into the future, because, by the way, the Rebels didn't just go back and grab the Hulk and bring him in. What they did was they went back and they spoke to Rick Jones, and they said, listen, you're the Hulk's best friend. Can you convince the Hulk to come with us to the future? Rick obviously talked the Hulk into doing it, or we wouldn't have the story. But when the Hulk actually gets to watch his good friend die, in this particular issue, when Rick Jones is lying there bleeding, the Hulk does get the chance to go over and talk to him for a few before he actually passes, which is, I don't know if that's explored any in the rest of the, at all, at any point in the rest of the Hulk titles, but that's gotta be something, you know, to go forward into time and watch your best friend get killed, and that's gotta mess with you a little bit. I thought that was pretty poignant in itself, but, definitely the way to send it out was Maestro's way of going. That was a great, great way to end it. That is Future Imperfect, folks. Now I'm gonna go ahead and let Ronnie, do you got anything you want to add here before we start closing up shop?
No, that's it.
Okay. You the Maestro as a character, you think he's a pretty ruthless dude? You got any?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay. Mark, how about you, man? This is your baby. What do you got to say?
Well, like I said, I wish they could get what they need to do with Universal done with. You know, just begging Disney and Marvel, do Future Imperfect as a movie, because you can really spend some time in this. You know, so the whole first 30 minutes could be the end of the world, and like that's how I would do it. I would actually show, like, you know, through some bit of narration, some showing, like, you know, show the nuclear holocaust, show the Hulk fighting all of these people, and then spend some time with, you know, with some of these characters, you know, Piz Fizz and Schmigeggy and
Schmigeggy and Lumpy and Itchy and
You know, spend some time with Rick Jones in this world. You don't have to focus the whole thing on the Hulk, but I would like to see a little bit of how the Maestro came to power and what the world is like before they even go back in time and get the Hulk. You know, maybe even change the plot line a little bit where they have to get Dr. Doom's time machine from the Maestro first and have it be the plot of the movie is, you know, the Maestro stopping them from trying to use the time machine And then, you know, and then they can kind of go into sort of a literal translation of the comic book, because, I mean, because as it's written right now, there's not enough in there to make a whole movie out of. I would absolutely like to see a cinematic version of this story. And again, it doesn't have to connect to anything because it's told in the future. But it gives us a version of the Hulk that we haven't seen in the movies yet.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you'd read some Secret War stuff. Were you okay with the way they portrayed the Maestro in the newer stuff?
Yeah, it's just the ending sucked.
I actually read the ending, I think. Ronnie, you might have actually told me about it, if I remember correctly.
I think I did, yeah.
It just didn't seem... Well, Secret Wars is Secret Wars. We've done 8 podcasts on that, and I'm done talking about it right now.
9.
9? Oh, jeez.
9. No, 8, because we covered 8 and 9 at the same... No.
Well, you can count 9, because we talked about it as soon as it hit. As soon as we found out the news, we spent a whole podcast on it, too.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but anyway, all right, well then, Future Imperfect, great standalone story, great art, in my opinion. It's George Perez, and he's showing off what he can do. There's some great layouts in there. You guys... if you guys get a chance, grab a hold of the trade. I'm sure the trade's pretty easy to find. You can probably find it on Amazon. Now check it out. Peter David writes a great story. It'd be something to have for the collection for sure.
And if you get the trade, there's a standalone story in the back of it called The Last Titan.
Okay.
And I think it just reveals Bruce Banner as an old man, but he's still the Hulk. He can still turn into puny human Hulk. You know, Banner, puny Banner. Hulk hates Banner, kind of, you know, that Hulk. But he's the last person on Earth.
So it's kind of like what the Hulk's future is.
Yeah,
after this encounter he had.
No, not even this encounter. It's just he is the last person on Earth because he's the Hulk and nothing can kill him.
Okay.
Like, at one point he tries to take his own life by jumping off a cliff, and he just Hulks out and survives.
Ooh, sounds interesting. Any ideas? Were it written by Peter David, or do you know?
No, but it's actually really good. I think it is. I think it's pretty interesting. Where is it? Yeah, it's written by Peter David.
Is it? Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I was thinking the art, though. The art is by Dale Keown.
Ooh, Dale Keown. Oh, my gosh, dude. One of my favorite artists of the 90s. Mark, you probably remember some of the Hulk comics. Were you collecting back in the 90s, Mark?
Yes.
Do you remember there is one that came out in the 90s where... Well, first off, does Dale Keown... I know you don't pay too much attention to the creative teams. Does that name ring a bell at all?
Not even a little bit.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'll describe this cover. You tell me if you can think of it, if you know what I'm talking about. You got Bruce Banner on one side, Grey Hulk on the other, and in the middle, ripping through, is the Green Hulk.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
Okay, I'll send you a picture. Anyway, Dale Keown did oh my gosh, man. He went off to Image, did Pit, and some of the best art I'd seen in a very long time. One of those great artists of the 90s that Marvel snatched up and
turned... Can draw a really good big man.
Oh, my gosh. Pit was insane. But, all right, we're getting late, folks. We're going to get into plugs. First off, I want to thank both my guests, Ronnie Adams, Mark Radulich, the patriarch of the Radulich and Broadcasting Network. These guys came over here to talk Future Imperfect with me, and I can't thank them enough. So we're going to go ahead and get into plugs. Ronnie, first off, Ronnie Adams, I think you do a podcast. What do you do, man?
I do one every once in a while. It's called...
You just do them and store them on your computer for fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You just look at all the podcasts I got.
I will tell you this. I have ran into some past in the past, so I'm using a new program, some technical issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the new program is causing some trouble, so with editing, but they should be out this week from the 20th. So hopefully they'll be out by the 23rd, 24th. About 3 episodes of the Screaming Boy podcast, where we talk about just about anything about movies. We've got, upon release, we've got what I like to call the train wreck that happened live here on the Radulich Broadcasting Network, where we did a live show for the Screaming Boy podcast and talked about Krampus and things like that. So it was over Christmas. And the reason I call it the train wreck, because everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. And it was
and
hysterical.
Teasley was on there.
Teasley was on there. So everything that went wrong could have gone wrong. I mean,
we love you, Teasley. We love you.
I'm kidding, Jason Teasley. But it was hysterical. Then we've got our Star Wars review, Star Wars show coming out with Jason Teasley and Joshua Calandrus. And then we've got the first episode of the Documentary Diary with one Justin Starcher coming out with Max TT Racing. TT. And so those will be out this week. You can catch us right here on the Radulism Broadcasting Network. You can also catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Catch us on Periscope and Twitter at Screaming Boy PR, Instagram, Screaming Boy Productions. You can look us up on Facebook. Just look up Screaming Boy Productions. And www.screamingboy.com.
All right, awesome. Mark Radulich, sir, please plug your stuff.
Wednesdays, typically, Robert Winfrey and I on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network review the latest in movies. Depending on when this goes up, you'll hear us review Kung Fu Panda, Deadpool, Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies.
Yes.
Zootopia, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. We'll also around the same time be doing a special podcast and look back at Man of Steel called In Defense of Man of Steel, in which we will try to explain to people that just because this isn't the Golden Age version of Superman doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm not saying the movie is perfect, but
no.
For fuck's sake, you know, let's try a different look at Superman and see how, you know, see what we can come up with.
I may be calling in on that, Mark.
Sure. So that'll be coming out around the same time as Batman vs. Superman. Every Thursday there is a podcast that I do. We'll say week one is Long Road to Ruin, where we review movie franchises. This is Tolkien month, so we'll be looking at Lord of the Rings versus Lord of the Rings. And then we'll be looking at the Hobbit movies, and we'll be revisiting Peter Jackson, apologizing for them, saying, I'm sorry, they're a mess, here's why. But we'll be celebrating Black History Month by looking at the Shaft trilogy.
Shut your mouth.
And by looking at Beverly Hills Cop. And in March, we'll be looking at two animated series. One is the Madagascar movies, because Afro Circus. And... We went to the circus recently, and I kept singing that song. Oh. The kid would just look at me, and I'd be like, circus, Afro circus. And she's like, shut up, daddy.
Family's proud.
You're not making any sense.
He's special.
And then, around the same time as Batman vs. Superman, because my middle name is Synergy, we will be looking at the animated Dark Knight Returns. Which, by the way, we planned to do that when I was making up the schedule back in December. But if you haven't had an opportunity, go watch, and the third part of it just came out this past week. It's not available to rent, but it is available to buy, and I bought the trilogy. Son of Batman, Batman versus Robin, and Batman Bad Blood. These are the animated Batman movies from the animated DC Universe, which, these are some of the best movies. I mean, it's so funny how Warner Brothers, their animation studio, puts out amazing features. And their live studio is struggling, you know. And like Suicide Squad, great, but up to this point, they've had some real stinker. But this was the Damian / Robin trilogy. It's a little bit of the Court of Owls. It's a little bit of some of the other more recent Batman stories that center around Talia al Shire. Talia al Shire. Talia al Ghul, dropping off Damien in a basket saying, will you take care of my baby?
Save my baby!
In a little basket. Here, take care of my little ninja baby. But it's actually, you know, as much as I'm making jokes about it, it's really well done. So that's
yeah.
Son of Batman, what do you call it? Batman versus Robin, which was amazing. And then this latest one, Batman Bad Blood, which is basically the start of like Batman Incorporated. Really, really good. They were fun movies to watch. So go ahead and take care of those. But we'll be looking at the animated from the same studio, the animated Dark Knight Returns, around the same time as Batman versus Superman. And one last thing I want to plug, because it was our most popular show it was last year or the year before, whenever we did it. But April 1st, or the same weekend as WrestleMania, Baby Metal is releasing a new album. We're reviewing it the following Thursday. So it comes out on April 1st. The next Thursday after that, we'll be reviewing it. So please tune in for that in April. New Baby Metal drops. Hopefully it'll be just as popular this time around as it was last time.
Your wife planning on coming on, right? She's going to be on there?
By hook or by crook.
I can't wait. Can't wait. I have the kids. I actually listened to some Baby Metal probably over the weekend. Put it on the old boob tube and let it play for the kids just a little bit. Because good stuff. Good stuff. Caleb always... He's starting to get more interested in stuff like that, so it makes me smile.
Real quick, some of the albums we're reviewing besides Baby Metal, that's the one I'm like really looking forward to. But we have a Killswitch Engage retrospective. I may or may not have fallen asleep on that show, I'm not totally sure.
I don't think you did. I think you made it through.
I may have zoned out once or twice. But by the time you hear this, we'll have reviewed Megadeth Dystopia, Avantasia Ghostlights.
Boy, if Megadeth Dystopia doesn't fit in right now. That's actually coming up. That's being released this coming Friday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And then Anthrax for All Kings. We'll also be reviewing at some point the new Amon Amarth that's coming out March 25th. And Daredevil Season 2 drops on Netflix March 18th. You can look for, on the 23rd of March, depending again on when you're listening to this, a full review. We're no longer breaking the reviews up into four parts because I can't depend on anyone to actually fulfill four dates to review anything. So we're going to do exactly like what we did with Jessica Jones, which is Robert Winfrey and I will just spend 2 hours talking about the entire series.
Cool. Well, as for myself, you can go online and find my petition to make Daredevil Season 2 PG-13, and I'm asking them to not don't put the Punisher in there because I'm a whiny little brat. Yeah, I don't think so. You can find me at Stiznarchy on Twitter. You can find this show. I do have a Twitter account. It's at SourceMatCast. Give a like to the Rattle at Your Broadcasting Facebook page as you can stay up on top of all the great podcasts that are out there. That we put a lot of love into what we got out there on the network. As for, yeah, check out the documentary diary. It's going to be on the Screaming Boy Productions here pretty soon. This is dropping the 25th of, this is dropping in March, I think, this particular episode. So a lot of the stuff will already be out there. I think that's about it. My shows in particular, we're going to have a Deadpool versus Carnage show with me and Jason Teasley here. It's probably already in the can and already aired at this point in time. Me, Ronnie, and Benjamin J. Cologne had a great conversation in regards to Superman. Ronnie, help me out. That was Superman.
For the Man Who Has Everything.
For the Man Who Has Everything. What a great story. Alan Moore.
So great, you forgot the name.
Nice one.
Sorry.
Bastage. I'm sorry. I got too many podcasts going on. We got a time travel story here. I'm working in the future, going back in the past. It's just all sorts of craziness. But anyway, I want to thank you guys again for coming on here and our listeners who joined us to take. I'll probably edit all this out. I don't care. It's too late.
Okay, that brings our show to a close. Our next show, good friend of mine, Michael K. Easton, local artist here in the Marietta, Ohio Valley. We're going to be talking the return of Superman. If you may recall, me and Patrick Mullen discussed the death of Superman. I welcome back Michael K. Easton to talk about the return of Superman. So it'll be a lot of fun. Join us. That's scheduled for March 14th here in a couple weeks. Thanks again for listening. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.